We're learning Rav Dessler, the Michtam Eliyahu, Volume 1, the essay which is called Schar Mitzvah, Mitzvah, the reward of the mitzvah is a mitzvah. We're almost at the end of the essay, on page 7. Just to recap what we said in the last class, was that we said that a mitzvah draws on it another mitzvah. The performing of one mitzvah results in a further mitzvah, because the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah. Which Rav Dessler explains means, since there's no reward for a mitzvah in this world is too small for a mitzvah, so therefore all the reward is in the world to come, and anything which a person would think is a reward for a mitzvah in this world is a mistake. Like, imagine somebody goes to a wedding and there's nothing there, there's no food there, and suddenly he sees a plate of food and he starts eating it, doesn't taste so good. And they say, no, that's the cleaning lady's woman. That's her lunch. What do you, right? That's for the workers. That's the food of the workers. The meal hasn't been served yet. So the same thing, anyone who wants to take from this world, the goodness of this world, as a reward, is making an error, because it's not reward.
That's right.
Now, according to that, we ask the question, we say in the Shema, in the second paragraph of Shema, that if we'll observe the mitzvahs of Hashem and perform them, right, with all of our hearts and all of our souls, which is very high level service, so then Hashem will give us the rain, and we'll eat and we'll be satisfied, there'll be produce in the fields, there'll be food for our livestock, and there'll be abundance in this world. So seemingly that's a question, because then we're saying there is reward. If you'll do this, if you'll perform the mitzvahs, then I will give you rain in its time. It seems to be that there is reward in this world, and we say it every day. We say it about the greatest mitzvahs of all, loving of Hashem. Rav Dessler answers with the Rambam. The Rambam says that when a person commits himself to a Torah lifestyle, so Hashem will remove from before him any type of obstacle that might prevent him from fulfilling mitzvahs. So therefore, he won't have to suffer anything. He won't suffer any deprivation. Anything that might prevent him from performing mitzvahs, Hashem will take away from him. And that's what it means, that there'll be rain in its time, you'll have what to eat, and you'll have where to sleep, and you'll have what to wear, and you won't be sick, and you'll have your strength. So all of that is all because you have committed yourself to a life of mitzvahs. Hashem will help you to live a life of mitzvahs. But that help that you're receiving, that physical help that you're receiving, the money, the food, etc., that's not reward. That is not reward. That is just helping you to live the life you want to live. And the way a person wants to go is helped. So a person who wants to live the life of service of Hashem is helped to live that life. So that's the answer to the question. That rain that's promised, that abundance that's promised to us, is not reward. It's not reward. It's just means to help us. And then a further point we made is, not only is it just a means, but it's actually, whatever Hashem gives us in this world is holy, because it's for the purpose of serving Hashem. Right? The abundance He gives us, the physical well-being that He gives us, is for the purpose of serving Hashem. And if you misuse it, if you use it for your own personal benefit, so that's like a misuse. It's like you've stolen. It's like, imagine an employer gives his work an expense account. Or he gives him the ability to use the phone and to use the stationery in the office. And the worker uses the phone for his own personal phone calls. He's a thief. Ah, the phone is free. The phone is to do the work of the boss, so to speak. Why were you given a phone? As part of your job. Why were you given stationery? As part of your job. You were given the stationery to use to write letters for the business. If he's using it for his own personal letters, so then that's called abuse, that's called misuse, that's a type of theft. So essentially, that's how we should look at it. Whatever Hashem gives us in this world is all purely for the service of Hashem. Then we ask the question, well, if that's true, it means that all the wonders of this world, all the pleasures of this world are not for having pleasure from. How can it be there's such a pleasurable world with all sorts of wonderful pleasures, and all of this is denied to us? And the answer to this question is, none of it is denied to us. On the contrary, those people who don't live with a Torah outlook, so they pursue the pleasures of this world for the sake of the world itself. They're living in this world for this world, is the analogy of the man that was condemned to death. The Chofetz Chaim brings the analogy of man who was condemned to death, and he was put into a glass cage in the middle of a town, in the town square, and that everyone should watch him die of hunger. No food would be given to him, and he would be locked in this cage, and he would die of hunger. And of course, all the people of the town wanted to see this person, and everyone came to gawk and to stare and to look at him. And there was a visitor from out of town who also heard of this. He came a few days later, and he says he also wants to see this. And he came to the town and he saw the person's eating meat. He says, "What's going on? I see he's eating meat. What do you mean he's being starved to death? I see he's eating a steak there." And they said, "No, fool, look carefully. He's eating his own arm. From hunger, he's eating his own arm." So therefore, that's the idea of a person who's not using this world to service Hashem. So he's misusing the whole world. The whole thing is being wasted. The pleasure of the world is not for those who pursue pleasure. For those who pursue pleasure, just never reach it. They just never reach it. They're always dissatisfied. It's never enough. Whatever they get, it's never enough. Any pleasure they achieve is good for the moment, but then it's gone. But if we're using the pleasures of the world for serving Hashem, then you're using it correctly. We can give another analogy. The analogy would be, let's say, a person receives, let's say, a computer, one of these computers. But he doesn't know how to use it. He doesn't know what to do with it. He has no idea. He's never seen such a thing before. So he says, "You know what, it'll make a good coffee table." And he's right. It's a very good coffee table. You put it next to your armchair, and you put your coffee there, and you can put your cake there. It's fine. It's a very good coffee table, but it's a total waste because he's only using the box. Inside, there's a whole technology, there's a whole genius inside that box, and he never accesses it. So it's the same reason that a person just uses this world for the sake of this world. He never gets access to this world, whereas a person who uses this world properly is building the world to come, and in the process he's enjoying the process itself is designed to be enjoyable. The process itself is supposed to be enjoyable. If we do it correctly, it can be enjoyable. That's we mentioned in the Chumash that there's a special criticism of the Jewish people that if they serve Hashem but without joy, so that takes away their credit, right? In fact, the curses, it says the curses come out because you serve Hashem without joy. And as you do it as a chore. It's not supposed to be a chore. If you make it a chore, you're not doing it correctly. It's not a chore. We should feel a sense of privilege. The final two paragraphs, we'll just read now, as we didn't see last week. The Kevash Higanu Lezeh, Hine Nisbar Lono HaMishnah. Once we've reached this point in this essay, that as we said before, that the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah, Hashem allows us to do mitzvahs, and if you do one mitzvah, He'll allow you to do more mitzvahs, and not only that, He'll give you the means to do mitzvahs. Right? We can now understand another teaching, which we've quoted before, and that is, Ezu Oshir HaSameach B'Chelkoi. Who is the wealthy person? The person who is happy with his lot. D'Lechoyer Kasha. Seemingly this doesn't make sense. Who's the happy person? The person who's happy with his lot. Seemingly this teaching does not make sense. Why? If a person is perfectly satisfied with what he has, therefore he has no drives. Whatever I need, I have. And therefore I have nothing to do, because whatever I need, I have. And therefore I'm just going to wander around the house with my hands in my pockets and whistle. And just wait. And I'll wait for lunch. You know, after lunch, then I'll wait for supper. If I have everything I need, there's nothing for me to do. So therefore, how can such a person be happy when he has no drives, he has no ambitions, and he has no cheshek, he has no desires. There's no whatever he needs, he has. So he's the rich person. Whatever he needs, he has. He's perfectly satisfied with what he has. So therefore, he has no drives. How can he be happy when he has nothing to do? And if that's the case, even what he has, he'll have no pleasure from. The person has got nothing to do, so then even what he has is, it loses its pleasure. It loses its taste. How can we call such a person wealthy? Wealthy, we understand, is a good thing. To be a wealthy person is a good thing. But if a person has nothing to do, how can that be good? He has no pleasure from his wealth. It gives him no pleasure. He just has whatever he needs. That's one question. And another kasha. But how can he be happy with his lot? What does it mean to be happy with your lot? Surely the things that are missing to you. There's always something missing. There's always something that you have to still get. So you want to desire them. So then you're not happy with your lot because you still have things you want to do. If you do have things that you want to do, so then you have things that you want to do. You have things that are missing. You go shopping. Why do you go shopping? Because you don't have whatever you need in the house. So now you'll go shopping. So you're doing an activity to fulfill what you're missing. So you don't have it all. Otherwise you wouldn't be going shopping. That which he's lacking also wants to achieve them. If he's a person, we talk about a normal person. How can it ever be enough what he has right now? We never have. The reality is we never have all that we need. Right? The little that he has, how can that possibly satisfy? So it's a double question. The question number, if he really has whatever he wants, he's going to have nothing to do. Lack of drive, lack of ambition. And secondly, where do we see such a reality that a person always has everything that he wants? Right? There's always something missing. It's just not realistic to say I have everything I need. There's things that I have to get. There's things that I have to do. There are things that I have to achieve. However, according to what we've taught up to now, it all works out wonderfully. Someone whose main drive is towards spirituality. What essentially he wants from life is to grow spiritually, to come closer to Hashem, to gain spiritual wealth, not physical wealth, spiritual wealth, to become a greater person, a more loving person, a more joyful person, a person who's more awake, more aware, a person who's more in touch with reality, the reality of life, the true reality of life, the truth of life, is alive to life. Not he's drugged, not that he goes through life like a drunk, but that he's truly alive and he's spiritually aware. So a person who makes that his main goal, spiritual growth. And he only wants physicality because it can assist him to achieve spirituality. In other words, he understands that the real thing that he has to strive for is spirituality, life of the world to come, eternity, eternal pleasure, eternal goodness. And if he does need things of this world, it's only in order to help him. He needs whatever he can get it from. Whatever he needs to get from this world, right? Whether he has to hold down a job and he has to earn money, it's only in order to help him to reach spirituality. Adam kaze who moedel Hashem yisborach al kol prat for prat. Such a person gives thanks to Hashem on every single detail. Shadoisel Hashem yisborach l'sayoi. Every detail that Hashem gives him to assist him el to dosei haruchnius, to reach his spiritual identity, to get to his spiritual goal. He'll thank Hashem for whatever he receives. Because the good things he receives, that's going to help him. And the bad things that happen to him also are part of his service of Hashem. There are certain obstacles he has to overcome in order to achieve new heights. You can't climb a mountain without obstacles, right? Otherwise it's not called climbing. So therefore the difficulties in his life are all themselves for his personal growth. Something as difficult as happening in his life, and he has to undergo whatever, a stressful situation. He has to overcome problems. He has to overcome. He has worries and he has issues to deal with. These themselves are challenges. These are also good because it's part of the growth process. In other words, it's things that he needs. person who runs an obstacle course, he needs there to be obstacles. If there are no obstacles, then what did I do? Why did I come here if there's nothing for me to do? If you call in an expert to do an expert job, so he expects difficulties. Otherwise, why did you call him in? So we want to become expert in serving Hashem, so we have to learn to overcome difficulties. So that all of that's good. Whatever Hashem gives us, the good and the less good, is all good for us to help us to grow spiritually. So such a person is always satisfied. And there we go. There we have our definition. He's totally happy. The good is good, and the bad is also good, because it's all good. Whichever attribute Hashem measures out to him, whatever it is that Hashem gives to a person, if he uses it, he finds a way to use it for the service of Hashem. It's really more than that, because if whatever element we have in our lives is only being given to us to help us to serve Hashem. It's like a craftsman who looks at his toolbox and he sees a set of tools and he says, well, this, you know, the screwdriver I'll use for this, and the saw I'll use for that, and the hammer I'll use for this, but what do I do with this funny thing? I have no idea what it's for. But he has to understand that if his boss gave him this tool, that he better learn how to use it, because it must be something that he needs. The same thing when we look to our lives and we look to the elements of the lives, you know, I understand why this person's in my life, I understand why that person's in my life, but why is this certain person, right, driving me crazy, why is he in my life? What is he doing? So here also, I have to uncover the secret. This person is one of the ladders I have to climb to reach my true self. Otherwise, I'm going to miss out. I'm missing out on, I'm not using the full toolbox. And therefore, it's all good. And therefore, I'm totally satisfied. He's satisfied with his lot. This is what we mean. Who's the wealthy person who's satisfied with his lot? This is terrific. He understands that it's all being guided from above, and it's all absolutely essential for where he's at and where he has to get to. He has to get to a certain destination, and this is here to help him. I call it slowly toiva. All of it is for his good, mamish, literally, kol mad avid rachmona, because whatever Hashem does, Hashem being mekor rachamim, Hashem being the source of compassion, the source of goodness, the source of love. So therefore, whatever Hashem does, letav avit, he does it for my benefit. Whatever is happening is purely for my benefit. He feels, he sees it with his eyes, and he feels it in his heart, this goodness. And he is always happy. And this is the person who's truly fortunate in this world. Such a person is a happy person. In this world, he's happy. Because he's busy, he's got what to do. He's doing wonderful things, and it's for his own benefit, and he's growing. And it's all being used. So he's totally occupied. He's totally taken with his own life. He enjoys his life, he enjoys his self, right? With his handicaps, with his difficulties. This is all part of the process. It's all part of the process. This is all marvelous and special for him. Specially ordered for him. Person takes a plane trip, he has, you know, I've ordered a special meal. Oh, this is his meal. This meal is different to all your meals. I have a special meal, right? A special hechsher, that's a special, it's vegetarian, it's special, it's with this, out this, it's with that. This is a special, especially for him. His whole life is custom designed for himself. So this is truly the happy person. He comes to reach the highest reward of all, schar mitzvah. The reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah. He is on the ladder, and he knows that when he completes this step, then there's waiting for him the next step, right? So he's on a program to reach what he wants to reach. The next essay is called Yerushas Avoseinu HaKadosh, the heritage of our holy forefathers. The heritage of our holy forefathers, and this is part of a general category, which is to explain the concept of Midas HaRachamim, the attribute of compassion. Hashem runs this world with compassion. Compassion, by the way, is not the same as kindness. Kindness is when kindness is when you receive without any calculation at all. You just receive and receive and receive. You deserve, you don't deserve, you receive regardless. The world cannot run on pure kindness. On the other hand, the world cannot run on pure justice. Because on pure justice, who can justify all that he does? So therefore there's a concept of compassion. Compassion means that the justice is tempered. The justice is measured out. Which means when a person makes mistakes, so he's given time to rectify. If you're running a business and you've got a worker who's doing a very bad job and he's just not doing his job properly, so if you're a good employer, you'll throw him out. You'll fire him. He's ruining the whole company for you. But with Hashem, it's not like that. Hashem gives a person time to rectify all of his mistakes. That's called rachamim. That's called compassion. Hashem gives us time to fix all of our mistakes. We made mistakes in the past. We made mistakes yesterday. Or maybe we made mistakes 20 years ago. It doesn't matter. We can still correct it. Right? We have faulty traits. You have a person who's prone to anger. Or a person who's prone to jealousy, feelings of envy. Right? He can't take it. He sees a certain person growing in a certain way. He sees a person profiting in a certain way. It turns him, gets very angry with that person. He's filled with feelings of envy, jealousy. So Hashem gives us a chance to fix up all of these things. This is called rachamim. This is called compassion. So the first chapter, which deals with this section, speaks about sus avos, the merit we have from our forefathers. It's a concept that we're familiar with, sus avos. Says Rav Desla, hinenu regilim lachshev, we are accustomed to thinking, ki v'yoseinu bnei avoseinu akadoshim, since we are the children of our holy forefathers, bnei Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we are the children of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and likewise we are the children of Sar, Rivka, Rochel, and Leah. So we have yichus. We have pedigree. We are a pedigreed people. We come from very noble lineage. We come from aristocracy. We are the children of aristocrats, spiritual aristocrats. And therefore we have special privileges. And we can expect special treatment. The privileged few. So we are the privileged few. We are the descendants of the holy forefathers and foremothers. And therefore, we shouldn't be judged in a strict way. Because we're privileged, because our parents are friends of the boss. So therefore, we shouldn't be judged so strictly with the attribute of justice. But according to strict justice, we should have leniency. It's like a judge is prepared to do a favor to the son of a friend who's gone off the path. Right, really, he should get jailed. He should be thrown in jail. But, you know, his father is my friend. So the judge acts leniently. So we assume, we have a certain assumption, that that's what it means, schus avus. Schus avus means we get special treatment. For we are the sons of his beloved ones. Right, Avram is called Avram Oyhavi. My beloved Avram, the one I love. And therefore it's correct that he should have compassion on us. To incline our law on the good side, because of his love for the children of the ones he loves. And we're thinking that this is the inheritance that we inherited from our holy forefathers, Anake Ruah, giants of spirit, Ashekiv Hashem Yisborach, Yoisim Yikol Odom, who came closer to Hashem more than all other people. They were the ones who came the very closest to Hashem. And therefore, this gives us certain rights. And therefore, even if we do whatever we feel like doing, just, you know, give in to our own inclinations and do what we feel like doing. We call Mokum lo yase lanu Hashem u'um. Hashem won't do anything to us. We're privileged. Hashem won't touch us. Ki ach miyaskir lo es asher asu avoseinu ahuvov. We just have to mention to him what our fathers, that he so loves, what they did for him. And therefore all that we've done all that we've sinned will be forgiven in a moment. So that's the thoughts that we would think, right? What does it mean, schus avos? We have the merits of having forefathers who were spiritual giants. So that's a merit. What is that merit? What does it mean? What does it mean that our great grandfathers were great people? What does it mean? What does it mean in terms of us? So we understand it must mean we have some sort of protectia. The Hebrew word protectia. Right? You have certain influence, and you have special, special pass, and you get special treatment. And therefore, even if we sin, Hashem will overlook it because of our pedigree. Aval ha'im ha'emes muvan hu lanu hadavar zeh. But if in truth, does this make sense to us? Should we get special treatment because of our forefathers? Let's just think about this a minute. Does that make sense that we should have special treatment because of who our forefathers were? Aleph. Number one. Point number one. Ha'im mishpat nochen hu. Asher adayin yates mishpat ben ahuvo men din hamiti l'racham eilu. Firstly, is it correct justice that the judge should tilt the sentence of the one he loves, the son of the one he loves, from the true justice, just for the sake of compassion? Would we call him a judge? A judge who perverts justice because it happens to be his friend's child, would we call that correct? Is that right? Is it right that Hashem should give us special treatment? Where is someone else who didn't merit to be the child of a friend of his, so he should get the strict punishment? Doesn't seem fair. Just because my father happens to be so-and-so, so I get treated one way, and this person who happens to be so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, who wasn't the friend of the judge, he should get strict. Does that make sense? Should they get judged differently to us? Al-dova u'sachet mamish, when we both sinned the same sin. We have two people who both did the same sin. And one is the son of the friend of the judge, and one is the son of a stranger to the judge. Is it really correct we should get different sentences when we both did the same crime? He should be judged with the full force of the law. How can this be just? So this is question number one. How can this be fair? How can this be just? Question number two, Beis. Ha'im rishoyim la'tois mishpat l'rachem bishvil avo. Is a judge permitted to tilt the justice and to have mercy on account of the one he loves? Ha'loi kosu b'teirah. Surely the Torah itself says lo'itate mishpat. The Torah itself says don't tilt justice. Don't pervert the justice. Justice is justice. So the Torah says you're not allowed to pervert the laws of the Torah. Right, so therefore, how can Hashem do it? Just because we're his children, he should do it for us. Gimel. I'll call Eile. Hey, Hashem is Baruch Hu Makor HaEmes. Concerning all this, Hashem is the source of truth. Metziusoi Emes. And his reality is truth. Hashem is truth. He is the ultimate truth. His reality is truth. And it's impossible for us to imagine anything that's not true except amongst these creatures. Amongst us there can be falsehood. Amongst us there can be delusions. We can be delusional. Because Hashem's reality is hidden. And we live in a sense of falsehood. By us, we understand that there's room for falsehood. For us, there's lies and delusion because the truth is hidden from us. Let's say you see a certain product in the supermarket. Is this kosher or not kosher? Is it healthy or not healthy? You can't tell. And you ask someone, he tells you the wrong thing. Right? You ask somebody for direction, he sends you in the opposite direction. So you can never tell. Since we live in a reality that's hidden, we don't always see the truth. Many things are hidden from us. So therefore, there's room for falsehood. There's room for lies. But by Hashem, there's nothing that's hidden. There's no possibility of anything hidden. By Hashem, nothing is hidden. Hashem is pure truth. By us, there are things that are hidden. And therefore, someone can deceive you. Someone can lie to you, and you don't know the difference. You don't know if they're telling you the truth or not. Someone tells you a story, You can't tell it's true or not true. You can't read his mind. You don't know whether he's lying to you or telling you the truth. But by Hashem, all is revealed. The davar she'eino emes la'amita be called tzad, lo yikanes lefonav yizbarach lo. Something that's not fully true just can't be in his presence. By Hashem's presence, nothing is hidden. Therefore, what does it mean if we should ask Hashem to have compassion on us because of the merits of our fathers? Those are our prayers. We say, Hashem, have mercy on us in the merits of our fathers. If we deserve it, so we'll get it. If we don't deserve it, so we won't get it. So what does it mean that we're going to ask for schus avos? We want the merit of our forefathers to help us. Surely Hashem will not do what is not just. Right? And if therefore if we're liable, how can Hashem possibly treat us leniently? Okay, that's question number three. Question number four. Omu Chazal Shiyesh Madregas Vahoyudoyas Hashem Toma Behem Schus Ovus. The sages have also taught us that there are certain levels, that there are certain generations where the schus avos is over, it's finished. Now, imagine you have a checkbook. Your father left you a checkbook, and you've got a checkbook, you're filling it, and then you run out of checks. So that's it. Or they tell the bank starts bouncing the checks. Right? They said, what happened to all the money? He said, well, you used it, so now it's gone. So there's a concept also of Thomas Chus Ovis in Chazal. There's a concept that the merit of the forefathers runs out. Right? We've overdrawn from the account and it just runs out. So what does that mean? Right? Firstly, how do we understand it? How can it be that it just runs out the merit? That's number one. In Berichu Kaderes Mina Ovis Alpi Oshi Yabe Misfa Deres. Is this something to do with the distance of the generations? It's just we're too far away from them. We're too many generations away. Well, pigeder ache, or maybe it's some other definition. What does this mean that it just runs out? Right? How could it be? What would be the factors that would decide whether we still have schus avos or not? Okay, those are four questions we asked. So quickly to summarize, we asked, is it correct for the judge to tilt our justice because we are pedigreed? That's number one. Number two, is it permitted to tilt justice? Isn't it against the Torah? The Torah says that a judge may not tilt justice. If Hashem asks us to do something, he doesn't do it himself. How can it be such a thing? The third question is, surely Hashem is the source of truth. So therefore, how can anything false exist in his midst? How can there be falsehood in the midst of Hashem? And the fourth question is, we know there's a concept of Thomas Chus Avos, that the merit of the forefathers runs out. How do we understand that concept? What does it mean and where does it fit in? Before he answers this question, he has quite a lengthy introduction. This essay, by the way, is slightly different to other essays, in that the other essays we have were from notes that were taken by students, and therefore they're much more condensed. Here, this is from a letter that he himself wrote to his students. He wrote it in 1940, and he sent it out to his students. It was during the war, so therefore they were scattered, and he prepared a shiur in letter form, which he sent out. This is one of the, makes this essay quite different to the others, because it's his own writing, and therefore it's a little bit more lengthy, but it's still worthwhile for us to work through what he says. And the following is an introduction to the answer he's going to give. Amnam Kain. Right, the truth is, Lefi Shaloi Lomod V'Loi Yoda, a person, since he doesn't know, he hasn't learned and he doesn't know, Shelus Ka'elo Menakris Es Moichui. Person who has not learned and doesn't know, so such questions would bore into his brain. They would be like a woodpecker chipping away at his brain. They would bother him. These types of questions that we've asked, what does it mean, Schus Avos? Is it fair, schus avos? And does it run out at a certain point? These types of questions would only bother us if we were people who never learned and didn't bother to know. But if a person is a straight person, a person with integrity, if we try to be honest people, so what our response must be that we have to say to ourselves, lo yadati, I don't know. Not everything can I know. Aval im gam lo yadati, However, even if I don't know, this does not take away from my belief. Now, there's what we know, and then there's what we believe. And if we don't know something, at least we fall back on our belief. Just because I don't know why Hashem did such and such. Right? I don't know why Hashem made the Holocaust. I don't know. I can't explain it. Right? So, just because you can't explain it, so that doesn't mean that it's wrong. We understand Hashem's ways are hidden from us, and we trust in Hashem's ways. Should I be understanding everything? Right? If a person goes into hospital and has to have an operation, so expects the doctors must explain everything, the whole process, he wants to understand. We're going to treat you. Yeah, but what's in the medication? Just, don't interfere. Don't get in the way. So the same thing, Hashem runs the world a different way. Everything we have to understand, how He runs it, why it runs, why it works this way, why it works that way. Is that correct? Can we expect that? We can demand that. If you're a guest in someone's house, you can start asking questions about, who's paying for this meal? You just gave me a very nice meal. Now, who's paying for? Maybe you stole the food that you fed me with. It's obviously ridiculous. Right? We're guests of Hashem. We can't demand to know everything. And if we don't know it, we don't believe in you. It's on me. This is what a straight person should be saying to himself. I have to recognize that my faith should be pure. The kol ma she'amru chachmeinu zal, and whatever our rabbis have taught us, whether I understand it or not, I call emes, it's all true. And as we put our trust in the system, we put our trust in our teachers, our rabbis, and we say it's all true, we subscribe to everything, we take the entire package deal, I call emes bli shum sofek, without any doubt. V'zeh asher enenu mevin. And if there's something I don't understand, it's just because my understanding is weak. So I don't know everything yet. Okay, fine. So I'm weak. Just like a baby doesn't understand everything. There's certain aspects of this world that we're babies, we don't understand it. My grasp is lacking. It could be that Hashem explained it to me already 10 times. I didn't chap. Right? I heard a very elaborate explanation of everything, but I didn't grasp it. So therefore what? So now the explanation's no good. There are deficiencies in me. I just have to do the best with what I have before me. Hashem's ways are very great and very deep ways of owning the world. Even the greatest people, the greatest individuals, the greatest personalities have not grasped fully the ways of Hashem. Therefore, how can I expect to understand everything? And this in truth is how a person should be thinking if you don't know. If there's something you know, then you know it. But if you don't know, the approach must be, I trust my balabos, I trust my host, that whatever he's doing for my benefit. You go to a hospital for an operation. You say, I trust the doctor. I can't question him. Did he pass all his exams? And right. Did he pay his taxes? He's a good person. So you put your trust in the way, right? Whatever I don't know, I put in trust. And we also have to know that this is the way. Right? Even those people who do know, but at times there is a certain question, certain difficulty, certain troubling information. There's something we don't know how to explain. We have to understand Hashem's ways, His thoughts are very, very deep. Who are we? What's the level of us, the human race? Right? What sort of level are we on, spiritually speaking? How much are we supposed to understand ourselves? I feel a malachim, even angels. Even angels who are able to reach the depths of the truth of His justice, right? Even they don't reach the full level. And if we have to understand that, if we have such questions, often the questions just come to us from the Yetzirah, right? From the evil incarnation. There's an inclination within us to do evil, each one of us, and they come to confuse us. In order to weaken our faith, as when a question does come which seems to rock the boat, so you have to say this is a test. This type of question is a test, and it's coming to weaken us. If we look deeply into it, we'll see often that these questions are the efforts that are made by the Yetzer Hara. Leman hachikenu min ha'emes, in order to distance us from the truth. V'zeh ha'mogin asher aleinu lasum lefaneinu tomid leman lo yekiu aleinu chetzi chitze ha'yetzer b'tainus ha'kushyus. Right, and this is the shield that we have to use faith, we have to use our faith as a shield, so that the arrows that the Yetzer shoots at us, all the questions and all the problems we have, all the dilemmas we have, these arrows that he shoots at us, they should not damage us. That they shouldn't push us away from truth towards falsehood, push us away from holiness, sanctity, towards contamination. Therefore, we have to be careful. Right? We're asking questions, and it's good to ask questions, and it's good to understand. But we also have to have, as a backup, the fact that if there's something we don't understand, we cling on to our basic belief, our emunah, and that's our strength, that's our stronghold, and that's our basis. And we're trying to grow from where we are, but we try not to lose our grasp on our faith. Our faith being our basis, the basis of our operation. I'll just start the next paragraph, just two or three sentences, and we'll stop for today. However, how fortunate are we? Ashreinu matuv chalkeinu manoim goreleinu. How fortunate is our lot, and how pleasant is all that's been given to us. Zechir Hashem b'chol tuv bli gvul. Hashem grants us goodness without boundaries. Yitzen lan Yisrael b'sein akadoshim. Hashem b'reiche b'nosim yedu har b'moed. He's given us our teachers, our leaders, with their width of understanding, are able to guide us. But tuvam. Hagodl nosul gam lanu litoim miroi v'toiv asher zochu heim aboi. And in this goodness, so we also get the chance to taste a little bit the goodness which they have merited. We can also merit some of this truth. As we're going to try and perceive the truth to the best of our abilities, and there is possibilities before us. What we can't reach, we can't reach. We're going to stick to our faith. But we also have the ability to taste a little bit the goodness of the truth. Right, we have our teachers, we have our rabbis, and we have our own sense, our own good sense, to understand certain insights ourselves, by ourselves. And Gilu Lonu Soidus Nifloim, they have revealed to us wonderful secrets. Sisrei Torah, the hidden aspects of the Torah, Imke Chochma, the depth of wisdom, Ibo'iram Lonu Oigodl. And if we follow their light, as we can explore such questions, there are certain paths available to us. And in their light, if we'll follow their light, in their light, if we'll walk in their light, we will merit the great light. If we'll just look carefully into their holy words, we can find the truth. Hakol nochon, hakol muvan, hakol meduktak, betachlek saduktak, hori le'emes hagomu. Everything is correct, everything can be understood, everything is precise. With the exact precision, there is a truth. It could be we don't always see the truth. There is a truth, and we do have some access to it as well, and we have an obligation to try and reach that truth as well. And then suddenly we'll see, when we do pursue truth and the life of truth, suddenly we'll look at the question that was always such a big question. Suddenly we see the question disappears. If we'll just pursue the truth, the light of the truth, suddenly you'll see that something which was such a big question. Wow, I've got such a big question, it's bothering me so much. All of a sudden you see that question's no question at all. Right, the question suddenly disappears. The question really wasn't. It was just a misunderstanding. It was just a mistake. So because there's certain misunderstandings, it's not for us to jump to the wrong conclusions, but for us to cling tightly to our faith until eventually we will reach the truth with our own efforts and with Hashem's help, and the help of our teachers, we can see the entire truth and enjoy the truth. I think the analogy would be, let's say you have a good friend who's been a good friend for years, and one day he just comes and he slaps you in the face, right? Or he does something very horrible to you. So you say, oh, he's not my friend anymore, finished, our friendship's over, and he's just deceiving me all these years, and all the years, it was all wrong, it was everything, it was all a mistake, he's just a crook, this person. Say, no, maybe there's some justification, give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, this person's been your friend for tens of years. So suddenly he did something you can't understand. Well, maybe try to understand. Maybe there is a good reason why he did what he did. Maybe there's a rationale. Maybe there's something to be profited from the situation. So if we do encounter difficulties, we must know that with the basis of our faith is something very, very good, and therefore we should never let the questions upset our balance, but rather we should continue to operate and to serve Hashem in good faith.